You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Our mailbox is full. Goodbye.
Hey, listeners, it's Flora. We have a voicemail situation. Here at ELT, life has a natural rhythm. You ask us questions, we answer them, and then you ask us new questions. But lately, you've been asking us new questions that are actually about old questions, questions we've already answered.
I have a million follow-up questions.
Questions about flying?
One of the pilots said
this
that it
actually
totally
is from an episode about toilet seats.
It was the toilet one, and that was my.
This opinion. Comes from when you did the Carspiracies.
I know I'm a little late for the car show you did. However, I have.
Ever since our shows about airplanes, how to pee in public, and cars, a trilogy we call Planes, Strains, and Automobiles, you've flooded our inbox with questions like, does it really matter what kind of gas you put in your car? And where's the best place to sit on an airplane? So today, in an effort to clear out the new questions about old questions, so we can make room for some new questions about new questions, we're going to answer your new old questions. First up, planes.
Well, that must be Every Little Thing.
Hey, Captain Nick. Flora speaking.
Hi, Flora. Lovely to hear from you again.
Captain Nick Anderson flew for Virgin Atlantic. He was a long-haul pilot, and we talked to him for our Cockpit Confessions episode back in May. Welcome back to ELT. We have upgraded you to Premium Medallion Guest.
Oh, well, that sounds marvelous. I haven't a clue what that is, but it sounds very impressive. Thank you.
It's for guests who fly with us more than once.
Ah, okay. Shouldn't that be platinum? I don't know.
It's like you're haggling with the gate agent right now.
Well, I'm always up for an upgrade.
Okay, let's get to our listeners' questions. First up comes from Maddie, and she took issue with something you said the last time you were on the show.
I have an urgent follow-up question. One of the pilots said that it's totally a non-event for the plane to get struck by lightning. How is that okay? How does no one notice when the plane is hit by lightning? How does it stay in the air? Need answers ASAP.
I wouldn't say we don't notice. A lightning strike, it can be pretty dramatic, and it certainly wakes us all up if we're dozing off somewhere. So usually it's a very loud bang when the lightning hits the aircraft. But you see a very bright flash, big bang, and that would probably be it.
Should I look for someone with hair standing on end?
Well... You can if you'd like, but I don't think it'll be the lightning that does that. The aircraft is just like your car. If your car were to get struck by lightning, and no one really worries about that, it's what is termed a Faraday cage. So they're usually pretty well protected.
What's a Faraday cage?
Well, it is a metal box which conducts electricity around the outside and doesn't let electricity penetrate. So the electricity goes around the outside and then it exits the airplane through, we call them wicks. You'll see them hanging off the back end of the wings and the tail, little short wires that flap around, and they're designed to let static electricity exit the airplane. They're really just to make sure that when the lightning leaves the aircraft, it does as little damage as possible, because it often leaves a burn mark on the actual airframe.
Does it just look like a brown spot?
Yeah, if you look around the front of an airplane when you're in the terminal, and you'll often see where they've checked and then repainted a lightning strike, and you'll see little fresh paint spots over the nose.
Okay, are you ready for our next question?
Sure.
Hi there, my name is Toku McCree, and I do have a factual emergency. Growing up, my father was a fighter pilot in the Air Force, and so my whole life he's told me that when you get on an airplane, always sit at or just behind the wing, because that's the most stable part of the airplane. So I would like to know if he's right, and I should listen to him, or if he's full of it.
Is this listener's dad full of it?
When it comes to a comfortable area to sit in the aircraft, actually, he's quite right. If you think about it, an airplane is pretty long. Now, the fuselage is just a huge, long, thin tube. So when you're in turbulence and the airplane starts going up and down, the front and the back of that tube will lag behind a little bit. So you'll get a bit of movement of the cockpit and of the tail that you won't feel when you're in the center of the aircraft near the center of gravity. That center of gravity is usually around the point the fuselage joins the wing, somewhere in that area. So you're going to go up and down. You're going to be bounced around less in that area of the aircraft than you will if you're sitting at the very front or if you're sitting at the very back. Which means if you're in the sort of front end of economy and you're in a bit of turbulence, you can sort of chuckle a bit because you know those first class passengers, they're actually getting one of the worst rides in the whole aeroplane.
Nick, no one is chuckling in economy.
Hey, ELT. My name is Piper. Long-time caller, first-time listener. I mean, first-time caller, long-time listener. Okay. One question I have is, when you flush the toilet on the airplane, what happens to that waste?
Well, what do you think we do with it? We usually have a map on board of all the people we don't like, and at intervals we just hit the jettison button and over it goes.
I knew it.
No, all the solid waste out of the loos goes into big tanks in the back. And then when we get on the ground, some poor chap has the job of connecting up to it and with his honey cart and sucking them clean.
Oh, honey cart.
Yeah.
Why? It doesn't need to be named that.
I don't know why. I suppose it's slightly nicer than what another name you could give it. The poop wagon.
Poopmobile.
That has slight connotations for religious people. I wouldn't go with that one.
What about crap cart?
The sludge sucker.
Sludge sucker? Lou lorry?
Lou lorry. Yep, that would work, yes. I think something slightly more clinical. I wonder what the Germans would call it.
Scheißenkrappenwagen?
I'll give you my only German phrase. A zwei Bier bitte, mein Freund bezahlen.
What does that mean?
Two beers, please. My friend will pay.
That's one that all listeners should commit to memory right now.
Hey, this is Aviv Sharma, and I was wondering, when it's a pilot's first flight, is there any sort of ceremony or any sort of ritual that they go through after their first flight?
Well, I would say, Aviv, very unlikely on your first flight. First flights, you tend to be very junior and you tend to sneak on and sneak off again and hoping no one will ask you any difficult questions. So there's absolutely nothing involved in your very first flight. Perhaps on your last flight, they might come along with a sedan chair and carry you off the airplane. There would be, big crowds there cheering you and there would be fireworks and all sorts of things. You might even taxi in and be given one of those wonderful water spray arches from the fire engine. So,
are you serious?
Oh, most certainly. Yes, absolutely. Retiring captains often, if they're well known and well liked, someone will arrange for them to taxi in through that beautiful water spray that they sometimes put up.
I know you retired since the last time we talked to you. Tell me about your last flight.
My last flight was very boring, I'm afraid, Flora. I landed off it expecting to do several months more flying and get my last flight in. But before I could fly again, I wrecked my back. So I spent the last 2 months of my employment lying laid up, feeling very sorry for myself.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's a shame, but there you go. Life's like that.
Nick, I'm really sad you didn't get your send-off. I want for ELT to give you a version of the water arcs.
Oh, that's going to be interesting. how are you going to do that, Flora?
How about this? Captain Nick Anderson, thank you for safely delivering thousands of passengers to their destination over your long and lustrous major incident-free career.
Oh, that's ever so kind of you. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Cheers to you, man.
Stay tuned. We have lots more great questions to come.
When I walk into that Walmart restroom, which of the seven stalls there would be the cleanest?
We'll have the answer after the break. Up next in our follow-up roundup, strains, as in bacteria strains in public restrooms. A while back, we looked into, should you sit or hover in a public restroom? Bottom line, have a seat on that toilet seat. But we did get an important follow-up question.
Hi, Flora. Megan Welch here. Love your show. This is kind of an old episode. It was the toilet one, and that was mildly interesting and all. But what I want to know is when I walk into that Walmart restroom, which of the seven stalls there would be the cleanest? Like the first one or like the very last one at the end? Which particular stall is the least disgusting out of all those disgusting stalls?
Here to answer that is microbiologist Jenny Hayden.
Hi, how are you, Flora?
Jenny, what should Megan do?
So I guess part of it is dependent on your definition of disgusting, right? So for me, if I look at all of them and they all look okay, then I mean, at least sort of hypothetically would pick any of them.
I don't think Megan's going to like that answer.
Megan's not going to like that answer. So, right, if she's looking for the one that has the least amount of traffic from other people, it actually comes down to more of a psychology question. So there's a bunch of psychology research on this. People tend to pick the things that are in the middle. If you have a lineup of equal things, people tend to pick, for example, the stalls that are in the middle. This happens in all kinds of different scenarios.
So there you go, Megan. Head to the ends.
Yes, that should fit her criteria.
What's your stall selection protocol?
If it looks actually visually disgusting, then I'm not going to use it. But if it looks clean, I'm generally not really thinking about it, honestly.
So we always hear this from microbiologists. Y'all are just not worried about this. But what is the equivalent for you? Like, what should I actually be afraid of?
You know, for me, I think I'm much more worried about what I'm touching with my hands and then that I'm touching my face with my hands than I am about whatever happens to be on a toilet seat. So actually, that is something I do if I can in a public restroom. If I can flush the toilet with my foot, I do.
Okay, see?
So that is one thing I guess I take a precaution about.
Up next, automobiles. After our Carspiracy episode, which featured questions like, do you really need to warm up your car? Your thirst for Carfax was still not quenched. Y'all sped in with a lot more car questions, and we knew just who to call.
My name is Jason Torchinsky.
Jason is the senior editor at Jalopnik.com.
Jalopnik is the universe's finest general interest automotive website.
In my mind, the appropriate greeting for you is toot toot.
I'd be mildly confused by that. I know you're going for something automotive, but it's hard to get a nautical association away from toot toot. I feel that's more tugboat territory.
Okay, let's get to our listeners' questions. Up first is one I think a lot of people have probably wondered.
Does it matter what kind of gas I put in my car, or can I just buy the cheapest one and that'll be fine?
This is a good question. This is a question I feel like a lot of people have and isn't really well explained if you're not like a gearhead. Here's the thing about gas. The octane number, 87 for like the cheap stuff, 89 for the middle, 93 or 92 or is it 91? I can't remember, but somewhere in the 90s for the premium. That refers to the level of octane in the gas. And we don't really have to go into what octane is specifically. But what it does, it's actually something that inhibits the gasoline from combusting. It actually makes it harder to combust. A lot of cars, this just doesn't matter, but high power cars will want gasoline with a higher octane rating, so it resists combusting until exactly the right time. So if you have a modern high horsepower car and you put in the cheap gas, you might not be getting the maximum performance out of the engine that you could.
What kind of cars need this? Higher octane gasoline.
High horsepower sports cars, things like, I mean, there's so many now. There's a lot to choose from. Let's say you had a Porsche 911 or Subaru WRX maybe or something. There's a lot. If you bought one, you know it. And the secret actually is most modern cars, nearly every modern car has an engine computer inside there that basically knows what's going on and can sense if the gasoline is igniting too soon, and it can adjust ignition timing and other things to make sure it doesn't happen. So the truth is, if you put cheap gas in a modern car, even though it may not be ideal, pretty soon the engine computer will figure out what's going on and adjust it so you're not going to be destroying your engine. Older cars do not need the better gas at all, or the higher octane gas, I should say. Like, I've got an old 73 Beetle, yet you could probably run Jim Beam through it and it would be fine.
Okay, Jason, take home point?
The manufacturer's recommendation is always the safe way to go, but don't panic if you have to get the cheap stuff.
Okay, so unlike that question, the next question is one I've never, ever wondered.
Hi, Flora. My name's Liz. So my husband thinks that I'm crazy, but I swear that the key fob that unlocks my car works farther away if I hold the key fob up to my head. I've tested it. It works like a good 20 feet further away if I hold it up to my head. So I don't know if that's anything that you could find out, just so that I can get peace of mind that I'm not crazy. Thanks so much. Love your show.
Is Liz crazy?
Not at all. She's actually 100% right.
Get the fuck out of town. What?
No, it's absolutely true. And it's kind of interesting why this actually works. So that little fob, when you push the button, is sending out a little radio frequency signal, little radio waves. And it's a pretty low-powered thing because you're holding it in your hand. It's battery-powered, so its range is pretty limited. But weirdly, there's certain things that can work very well as antennas, and water is something that actually works pretty well to propagate radio signals. The water effectively increases the range of the signal. So if you hold your key fob to your head, it's going to use all the liquids in your skull and all the delicious juices in there as an antenna, basically, and it will significantly increase how far those radio signals propagate. You can get even farther. If you have like a gallon jug of water and you hold your key fob to it, the water in that like gallon jug will act as an even bigger antenna and you'll go even further. So yes, it's absolutely true.
Liz is going to be f***ing thrilled, I think.
She should be. She should make sure her husband shuts his yap, because she's absolutely right.
Hey, so this is a factual emergency. I'm driving home and my car farted. And I don't know if it's my car because I drive a Prius and I didn't think that this would happen anymore. I used to drive a minivan and I figured that car farts were only for cars that were not hybrid. And so what I mean by car fart is when you have that sudden smell of like rotten eggs. And it's really, really embarrassing, like, if you're in a car with, like, a hot date, and you have to say, no, that wasn't me, that was my car. So, why do cars fart?
Is this a combustion issue?
Combustion? Yes, kind of. Well, here's what's going on. For one thing, I think she should be looking at this as an opportunity to have an excuse to cover any farts that she may be producing on her own and just blame it on the car.
Oh, that was my Prius.
But yeah, here's the thing. The rotten egg smell indicates it's probably like a sulfur kind of chemical. And that's most likely a problem with the catalytic converter, which basically has catalysts, these chemicals inside it, that help break down the exhaust gases into something, less awful. It's all used to clean up the emissions from your tailpipe. We humans, our tailpipe emissions don't have nearly any of these systems. There's no catalyst you can plug into your rectum that I'm aware of.
Keep going.
So, yeah. But yeah, here's the thing. And the addition of the Prius hybrid thing is interesting as well, because a Prius is as likely to do this as any car, because a Prius still has a gas engine in it. It's not an all-electric car. It's no better. Its farts don't stink less than any other car farts might. So, you know, get off your high horse, Prius. And, yeah, check your catalytic converter. That would be my advice.
Hi, I'm Carl in Florida, and I'm just randomly driving in the car now, and my friend and I are trying to figure out how exactly car horns work. I'm not that much of a car buff to know, but I'm like, is there just an air horn inside the steering wheel? Does it run out? Like, if someone, like, has a lot of road rage, are they going to run out of their horn quicker? Like, I don't know how this works.
I'd love to sell this guy a gallon of horn juice, but that's not actually how they work. No, it's a captured wolverine with its limbs removed, placed in a canister, and it's squeezed painfully in the genitals, and it makes the sound we all know as car horns.
Oh, good to know. Okay, they're little speakers powered by electricity. That's how car horns work. Any last thoughts for our listeners?
Keep driving. Be careful of how much you rely on driver assist things, because I feel like it's making us worse drivers. And also, I think it's worth mentioning to all the Tesla drivers out there, you guys do not have self-driving cars. They do not drive themselves. So don't be stupid. Don't sleep. Don't read. Don't watch a movie. Keep your hands on the damn wheel and pay attention. There we go.
Jason, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun.
Until next time, honk honk.
Yeah, I could be on board with the honk honk, I guess. Yeah, two honks means it's friendly anyway. Honk, honk.
Thank you to all our listeners who called in for this show. We will be back in 2020. In the meantime, if you have a question you can't get to the bottom of, give us a ring, 833-RING-ELT, 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Emily Foreman, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just, scored by Bobby Lord and Dara Hirsch, mixed by Dara Hirsch. I have a follow-up question about me. Honk, honk. Goodbye.
Hi, Flora. This is Emily. I think I have a factual emergency related to the vicarious butt pain episode. I think I sort of have something similar, but it's also the opposite. Basically, when I see something really beautiful, I immediately need to pee. I think the best example of this is when I'm on a hike and there's a beautiful view. It's also happened to me in art museums, and it's happened to me in, like, nice, beautiful life moments. I just have an immediate and urgent need to pee.